The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, who's coming to your cordless? The giant head from Minneapolis. It's Tuesday night, March 26th. I had to think about it for a second. March 26th, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Sydney Opera House, and 10 p.m. Central Daylight Time here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis. I am Jim Peters, the giant head from Minnesota. And you're welcome. You're watching Jim Peters at Night. This is episode 101. We'd had our 100th show last night, and I want to thank you, folks. It was long and successful. We had, I think, more callers than we ever had ever, and that's pretty cool. Matter of fact, we had to bump something, believe it or not. Now, also, I don't know I never got the name of the last guy I was talking to on the phone, and I found him really fascinating, so we went on for a while. I probably should have cut him off a little sooner, but still, I thought he was really interesting. He has really good points, but the reason I'm bringing this up is because I want to apologize to him yet again. So with our distributors, we're authorized for up to 2 hours, and we pushed it last night to 10 seconds. So that's never, we've only done 2 shows. The second show we've ever done that was 2 hours, longer than 2 hours. That's with the 5 second or the 5 minute countdown at the beginning, which actually counts. So it's actually 2 hours and 5 minutes. So I want to thank everybody for calling in. Vladimir Putin called in. That's very cool. Jim Conaway, I'm just going off the top of my head here. Jeff Meyer, our sponsor, he called in. The CEO of Conk News, that was very nice. And we talked to Murray Sabrin. Fascinating discussion with him. Economist, nobody in America knows anything about money. The Congress is basically determined to default on the national debt. It's like that's basically the only way you can put it. So anyway, so we got it going on. It's actually pretty cool. I had a very nice night. I really appreciate it. So we're in the triple digits now. This is show 101. Let me tell you what's coming up tonight. I will read it off the list. Tonight, I don't actually have to read this. I know this. Tonight, our guest is Dr. Bruce Rapuano. Now, he is a neuroscientist by training and profession. He also said he's been abducted by aliens. He wrote a book about this called Dominion Lost. He's going to be joining us live. So if you have questions for Dr. Rapuano, you can text them or call in. I tell you what, I'd appreciate if you didn't call in with a webcam because I don't want to fish out of the screen, but you can call in audio 563-999-3435 or send us a text message at 408-458-5088, bottom of the screen here. All that information is there. If you have a question you want me to ask him, please do so. This is going to be interesting. Because he's a scientist, so, there aren't a lot of people who are familiar with science who say they've been abducted. And he also, half of his book is about various theories on how these spacecraft fly. And also, he said he has been catered to by, what, for lack of a better term, the definitive little gray aliens, which everyone who seems to be the vast majority of people who say they've been abducted seem to run into. And he goes into various biological theories of what makes these things tick. He doesn't actually say this in his book, so I'm going to ask him about this, but there's a big theory, he alludes to this, that they're essentially biological robots, that they're skin and bones, but they've been bred specifically to do a certain subject and a certain task, and they basically have no souls. that they're basically animals, trained animals. So yeah, we'll talk about that. I'm looking forward to this a lot. This guy's really interested. Read his book quite a while ago. So anyway, we're going to talk to him. And tomorrow night we're taking the night off. Sorry about that. Things we got to do. Thursday night, Jazz Shaw is here. He's a UFO and a conservative politics guy for Salem Media. Specifically, he's the weekend editor at HotAir.com. And we have a lot of people on here from Hot Air. I know that, but still, I don't care. It's I call Jazz my brother from another mother because he's got the closest gig on the internet that I have, and that is I talk about conservative politics and UFOs. And he knows more than I do. So I know you might find that shocking, but it's true. He does. So anyway, I love to talk to him. I'm sure he'll have some new scoop. And he's been writing some. Even, I can't remember if Jeff mentioned this to me in his call last night or off the air about the fact that Jazz has put up the last 2-3 weeks has put up some incredible columns at Hot Air about that stuff. So that's on Thursday. We don't do Fridays here at all, ever. Monday, April 1st, we got our month in review panel, and that's Tim Conaway, Don Zorro, and Larry Newman. And we basically just chew the fat for an hour and talk about the news of the month. And it's basically just, it's an excuse for us to fuck off. That's all it is. So these guys were my regular panel on the Conk News Weekend show when I was at work at Conk News and did those podcasts and radio shows there. So we're just basically keeping the band together. That's what we're doing. So that's on Monday. And now, once again, we're taking Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week off. So we're coming back. The next show will be we're doing Monday the 1st, and then we're coming back on Monday the 8th. So just want to let you know what we got going on there. Now, like I said, if you have questions for Dr. Rapuano, I tell you what, like I said, you can call in with your camera here. We're the first talk show in America. Talkers Magazine said this, not us. We're the first talk show in America that takes video phone calls. So you can call in with your webcam, and you do that by going, I get rid of this. I got too much stuff on the screen, man. I got too many monitors. You go right here to this URL, jimandnight.com/call. There's a big blue button at the top of the page. You push that. You get to a preview screen. You get to check your camera and mic and get the crap out of your teeth and comb your hair. And then when you push join at the bottom, you're in the queue. It's really super simple. Now, that said, I'm going to ask you not to do it while Dr. Rapolano's, while I'm talking to him. I don't want to mess the screen up with too many people. But if you want to do it before or after, that's fine. So now, if you've ever watched this show before, here we are, episode number 101. It's basically in three parts. First part's a monologue. I talk about usually the news of the day or how much I hate the media. Or occasionally, if there's some UFO news, I'll put it first. Then we have a guest. Guests can be all sorts of people. We talk to politicians. We talk to journalists. We talk to UFO abductees like Dr. Rapuano. We talk to a whole bunch of different types of people. And that's the way I like it. I like to keep it. I have a lot of interest. And also I have curiosity to the point where it's a sickness. So I need to know everything. So we have all sorts of guests on from all walks of life. People do all sorts of stuff. We have the Bigfoot hunters. We just go to town on this. And also, I'll just tell you this. You ask me why I take so much time off. Well, I do this show entirely on my own. This is basically my retirement job. Doing the show is relatively simple, relatively easy. I mean, it's live. I queue up at 10 o'clock every night here in our little studio, four nights a week. That's fine. I love talking to you. The thing that takes the most time is booking the guests. And it's not even that it's that hard. It's just really time-consuming because it's like a giant puzzle. I got a calendar. I got to fill the thing in. You got to figure out when people can come. You got to figure out if they want to come. There are all sorts of crap like this. That's what I do most of the days when I take some time off, is I'm usually booking guests. Now, you could say, yeah, I can do that in the afternoon, but I'm 68 years old. I'm getting fucking lazy. That's my excuse. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. So there you go. You want to know? Okay. I'm a lazy son of a bitch. That's right. So, and the third part of the show then, to go on, part three, the C block, if you will, that's usually non pertinent non-daily news. And usually paranormal stuff, UFO stuff, science stuff, whatever. It's like the stuff that basically does, like, I got stuff today. You won't hear this stuff anywhere. I got this stuff from last week. So we did a story, and I still can't get it out of my head. I got a friend of mine who wrote me back and said, you know, my life would have been much more complete if I didn't know this. And that is a woman in Britain, in the UK. So she's got two vaginas, and she's decided that she can have two boyfriends as long as each boyfriend sticks to one vagina. It's not cheating. That's what you learn here. I tell you what, you keep on watching, you're going to learn a whole bunch of stuff. I've been laughing about that for a week. It just amuses the hell out of me. So, any rate, now, but before we even do anything tonight, I told you, we actually had to bump something last night, and I'm kind of embarrassed by this, but really, we had so many phone calls, I couldn't get this in. We were going to play last night for our 100th show, we were going to play the new music video from the band Gun Hill Road. Now, why are we playing this? Because Michael Harrison, one of the members of that band, is a really good friend of ours, and he is the publisher and founder of Talkers Magazine, and he's been very good to us, and they've featured us on the magazine and all sorts of stuff. Very good, and we love him, and he's a great guy, just interesting as hell. I mean, you're talking about people. Some people have done things, you know, and I'm going to get to that in a second, too, about the fact that Trump is basically the only person who's been president at least 100 years who's done anything outside of politics. But, yeah, so people, you know, he's done a lot. So one of the things he does is this band. Now, this band's been around, I'm not kidding, for 55 years. They were one of those 1960s psychedelic bands in, you know, 68. I know that completely dates me, but I was alive then, and I remember this stuff. So they have continued, and they make music videos now and new songs. And they get played, this is amazing, they get played primarily on talk radio as bumper music because their songs are basically issue-oriented. So now this one's called Damn Scammers Get Off My Phone. It's about being scammed and phishing on your cell phone on the internet. That's what the song's about. The music videos are striking. They did one, excuse me. Michael Harrison came on the show for World Radio Day. I can't remember. Oh, it's February 13th. That's right. It's the day before Valentine's Day. So he came on, and he was the go-to person from the United Nations. They do World Radio Day. And, yeah, he's working for the United Nations, and he comes on this show. Don't ask me how the hell that happened. I have no idea. You know, I said this last night, too, and I want to thank all of you who've watched and called in and stuff. When it comes to guests, we're batting way beyond our pay grade. I mean, it's not even close. Quality of the guests we have on the show. I mean, we've had a lot of what people would call A-list guests come on this program, and we've only been doing this like 8 months. So now I did, you know, audio radio shows and podcasts for years before this, but this is actually, you know, and the thing, that's the other thing. What do you call this thing? Because people say, well, you do a podcast. No, this is not a podcast. It isn't. Podcasts are usually audio first, and then the video feed is secondary. This is opposite. This is a television show. I mean, I don't know if you're watching right now. And I know, yeah, we're on Blog Talk Radio. You can listen audio only without the picture, and we make that available. But it's like the opposite of most, you know, Joe Rogan does a podcast, and he has a video feed. Now, a lot of people watch it, but the thing is, it's a podcast first. This is a television show first, even though, you know, it's only one camera. And that's another thing we're doing next week, too. Another reason we're taking the time off is because we're outfitting the studio with a new camera and new lights. So, if you've been watching the show from the beginning, and probably not, and I spent 2 weeks tuning the lights in the studio, and we started on July 31st, and I spent another 6 weeks after that tuning the lights. We never really got it right. You know, we finally did. And so you're wondering, why are you going to redo it, Jim? Because now we're having to have lights cooked up to the computer. That's the reason. So we can change the temperature and the color and all that sort of shit on the computer screen. We don't have to fuck with the manual stuff in the lights themselves. So that's what we got going on here. I know. I love the equipment, man. And then the camera, the new camera we're installing. And this one isn't bad. This one has been pretty good. But the camera we're installing is even better. So I'm looking forward to it. And that's going to take us a week. So we're doing the month in review on the 1st, on Monday. Then we're taking a whole week off. We're coming back on the 8th, another Monday. So at any rate, I'm going to play now. All right, so now I got off track there. So Michael Harrison is a member of Gun Hill Road, and I was going to talk about their music videos. That's what I was talking about. Not only do they look really cool, but they use some AI in their music videos. I think it was the one they did for World Radio Day. I can't remember for sure. They've done one video that's entirely done by AI, entirely AI generated. And it's stunning. Now, does it look real? No. But still, visually, it's stunning. It is. Now, this music video we're going to play here in just a moment, it also, parts of it were also generated by AI. So without any further ado, now, okay, and one more thing. The reason Michael's not on tonight is because he had surgery on Thursday. That's the reason. So, and I doubt he's watching this, but if you are, Godspeed, friend. I hope you're doing well. I hope things are going working out. And with that, I'm going to play for you. This is the music video, Damn Scammers, Get Off My Phone, from Gun Hill Road.
Hey, Spock, get off my phone. Just shut up, leave me alone, and get lost. When you call me up at dinner, I start thinking like a sinner, been double-crossed. Who's that on the other end? You say you're my trusted friend? Are you kidding? If I'm a sucker for your fishing, I won't have a pot to piss in. That's your mission. It feeds my rage like I'm on roids. Don't wanna come off paranoid. But it's getting dangerous and continues to derange us by and by. Both their hands are in your pocket. Those headlines that seem to rocket just turn out to be clickbait. You think you got it straight, but man, it's just AI. Damn scammers, they'll try to pull a fast one. Damn scammers, don't believe me, you can ask one. Damn scammers, they cheat, they steal, they lie. It's enough to make you cry.
I wish they all would die.
Get off my phone! You still there? Launch a drone in their direction and deflate their big erection. F them up! Yeah, I'll find out where they live. There's nothing to forgive. I'll blow them up. Their treachery's well-rooted. All our email is polluted. It's a crime. I can't tell the spam from news. Walk a cow field with no shoes. It's all slime. You pretend to be my bank, then proceed to yank my crank. Every day it's getting worse. This technology's a curse. Just say goodbye. Little Johnny's overseas. Grandma, I need cash now, please. Hurry up. No time to wait. You think you got it straight. Again, it's just AI. Damn scammers. They'll pull a fast one. Damn scammers. Don't believe me. You can ask one. Damn scammers. They cheat. They steal. They lie. It's enough to make you cry.
They all should die, die, die.
Damn scammers. So you're a Nigerian prince? Damn scammers. I'm not convinced. Damn scammers. They cheat, they steal, they lie. It's enough to make you cry. They all deserve to die. There, I said it. You idiot! I'm so sick of it! You think that you're so smart? I'll tear your world apart. Full disclosure, I'll beat you at your game. Your life won't be the same. This ain't over. What do you mean, can I hear you? Scammers get scammed.
That's the band Gun Hill Road and the song Damn Scammers Get Off My Phone. That's pretty cool. I like that a lot. Like the song. I like the video is really striking. And I mean, some of those images are AI generated, not all of them. But and also from what Michael's told me, it's not necessarily the ones you think are either. So, okay, fine. That's cool. Anyway, Michael Harrison had surgery on Thursday. And Michael, I hope you're doing well. Thanks for this. And yeah, that was his contribution to our One Earth show, and a day late. So we have coming on in a few minutes. But before then, I just want to address something here. Now we did a show about 2 weeks ago, which got quite a lot of viewership, and I think it's because of the title that was on Rumble. You know, that was on our distributors, our platforms. And the title of the show was Trump Can Still F This Up. You know, I headlines, I blacked out the word fuck, which I can say here, and I just did. Because the thing is, all right, so for the first time ever, and I got together with a bunch of friends of mine for lunch last week, and they're all never Trumpers. They can't stand the guy. I pointed out that and they're acknowledging that he's ahead, you know, and this, the thing is, you have to think about this. This is the time in Trump's short political career that he's actually been ahead in the polls ever. He wasn't in 16, and I have gone on saying that I think there's evidence the 2020 election was cheated. There's certainly no definitive proof, but there was some legitimate evidence, and I'm not going to get into that right now, but it does bode well to say that Trump was never ahead in any poll in 2020 at any time. Didn't matter who was polling, what the poll was, did not matter. He trailed Biden the entire election. So, okay, so maybe it wasn't cheated, you know? I'm just bringing that up because that's what I do. But now it's the opposite. Now he's ahead in almost every poll. And my thing is, Trump, you know, it can be his own worst enemy. And, you know, his big problem is he talks smack. And even his supporters, of which I am one, I mean, will readily admit that. I mean, he can talk shit as well as anybody. Matter of fact, in some ways, that's kind of his not just his calling card, but his kind of his saving grace too. So, but the thing is, now he's ahead. You know, you can make an argument that in the past, all that stuff he said there during the 2016 election, well, you stop and think about this. Now, okay, you're one of the richest men on the planet, but still, you've never been involved in politics at all, at all. You have no name for this. You have some name recognition with the public, but not as a politician. Well, how do you gain that? Well, you get on the stage during a debate and you insult the shit out of everybody. I mean, it's actually not a particularly novel or brilliant concept. I mean, that's how you do it. And that's what he did. And it worked. It worked. But now it's the opposite. Now he's the seasoned politician. He's going against a guy who beat him in 2020, who's been an abject failure. I mean, there's just no way you can get around it. I agree with Bill O'Reilly said this, but he agreed with me because I said it before he did. And that is, Joe Biden is going to go down in history as the second worst president in American history. The first would be James Buchanan, who essentially negligence started the Civil War. I don't know if he actually started it actively, but he let it start and he could have stopped it and he didn't. And for that, For that, he's the worst president. He will probably never be dethroned from that. But and also, the guy was his administration was ridiculous. So, and the reason, okay, so why am I bringing all this up is because what was occurring to me is that we have never had a non-politician be president before. And if you think about this, this is like ever. It's never happened. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Trump can keep his mouth shut, he might actually win this thing. But then that's a big if, too, you know. So you don't, I mean, my point is that he has a hard time doing that, and he could screw this up royally. But so far, so good. And all this stuff, the legal stuff they're throwing at him seems to be backfiring. So anyway, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens here. You know, we got 7 months to go before the election, and I bet I'll talk about it tomorrow because this is a talk show. I don't know if you noticed that. Our guest, Dr. Bruce Rapiano, is here. And we're going to put them on. Little bumper music for you. Hey, Bruce, are you there? Hello? Hello? Bruce, I cannot hear you. Let me try something here. All right. No, I think we've lost him, haven't we? Hello, Bruce. Can you hear me? We can neither see you nor hear you. Either one. Oh, man. Hello? There we go. There's a blank screen. Bruce? I can't hear you, Bruce. I don't know if you're there. I can't see you either. I don't know what's going on here. Oh, well. You cut out.
Dr. Bruce Trapiano joined.
Still can't see you. Still can't hear you. I should tap dance or something now. Those of you who are watching, thank you for bearing with us. We have a little technical difficulty here. Hey, Bruce, I'm sorry. I don't got anything. Can't see you, can't hear you. If worse comes to worse, Bruce, why don't you try calling us on the call-in line? That's 563-999-3435. Once again, 563-999-3435. Oh, man. All right. Okay, well. See if we can get our shit together here and get him on somehow or another. All right.
Jim, can you hear me?
Yeah. Bruce?
Sorry about the technical difficulty there.
No problem. I'm glad at least we got this, so that's good. That's good. How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you? By the way, great to be on with you finally. Congratulations
yeah.
on your 100th show.
Thank you
yesterday.
Very much. Appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. But, you know, the real congratulations is that you're with us. So, you know, I read
yes.
your book. All right. And it,
so
it was just absolutely fascinating. I have to say, I found it absolutely riveting. I did. So, first of all, Bruce, why don't
you
explain to our viewers or listeners at this point. Can you just go through your professional background a little bit?
I have a bachelor's degree in the major in neurobiology, minor in psychology, a PhD in neuropharmacology, and a JD law degree. and I've been working for a few decades now as a cell biologist. I just want to interrupt you, see if you've got any video for me at the moment yet.
I'm sorry?
Do you have any video for me yet? Can you see me?
No, I don't. No.
Okay.
I don't have any...
I'll continue with my background. And so I've been working as a cell biologist for a few decades at some fairly well-known medical research institutions, namely Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and most recently Hospital for Special Surgery. And I have worked as an independent medical researcher for quite a few years.
We got you now. We're good. So should I hang up the phone?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I hung the phone up. Okay.
All right, I'll hang up the phone and let's.
All right, we're good. Continue. We're good. Oh man, you're very attractive. I'm old. Are you good?
Didn't hear anything? You should not have hung up.
I shouldn't have hung up.
Jim?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay.
I can hear you.
Call
just.
Again,
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me? I shouldn't. Oh man. All right. Okay. Yeah.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Call back.
Hold, and you will be able to listen to the show.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Let's try
okay.
This way, Jim.
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Okay. I can see you. You can see me. And
yes.
I think we can hear each other.
Yeah, we can. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we'll get a little bit of feedback, nothing major. Nothing major at all. All right. So you went through your professional credentials. Now, do you want to start the first chapter of your book is basically about this experience you had. Were you about 14, 1965?
10
years old.
10 years old.
Okay. All right. So you want to tell the viewers what happened?
Well, this was a very unusual close encounter of close encounter, I would say, of the fourth kind, as it turned out. And the only, similar sightings that really had the same degree of multiple witnesses in terms of numbers of witnesses was the Travis Walton case, which everybody remembers back from 1975 when a lawyer in Arizona was abducted
and he has six witnesses to that, right?
Right. He had seven or eight witnesses and they returned to find after they had seen that the UFO, he had been struck by he called it a bolt of energy. They drove away, drove back. And when they did so, he was gone. Well, similarly, there were seven or eight witnesses to my close encounter. And what we had seen was we were playing a game of kickball in our front yard. It was a beautiful day in late June, cloudless day. And I was playing defense. And for some reason, I just turned my head to the right. And I happened to see in the cloudless sky the largest light I'd ever seen in my life. And it was a very unusual configuration. It actually looked, Jim, like the biblical star of Bethlehem.
Yeah.
And not just the point source of light, like a star or a planet, but this was 2.5 times the size of the full moon. And so what I did was I had no one else in our group had seen it except me. And so I walked past the oak tree that was kind of obstructing my view of the UFO, and when I did so, I could see it was silent, motionless. It looked like it was right above us. Again, huge, looked like a giant star overhead. And at this point, my other classmates that were playing the game of kickball drew close to me, surrounded me, because now they had noticed it as well. And now, at this point, the whole scene transitions to a very strange effect. And this has been replicated in the UFO literature, or at least reported in the UFO literature, numerous times. They call it the Oz effect, Wizard of Oz effect. Everything seems to slow down. Where you hear the ambient noises from the neighborhood, the birds and the insects beforehand, everything in the surrounding environment.
Okay. I'm on you. Now you. All right, there you go. Okay, there we go.
So I think we have
both
audio and video at the same time now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think we do.
Now, and what I was going to say is that at this point where we were experiencing what has been now reported as the Oz effect, you know, I frankly was trying to figure out what was going on. Why did everything in the environment seem to become drastically change to this strange scene that was now unfolding in front of us. So I turned my head to the left just to see if I can take my eyes off the object. Maybe I wouldn't be so distracted by it. I would be able to see if I can hear anything. Again, I heard none of the crickets and,
yeah,
the grasshoppers, that the noise from which had been deafening while we were playing the game, but
and
now
you
was gone.
You were talking about this in your book about the fact that part of the Oz effect is that, and people report this regularly, that there's,
yes,
absolutely no noise. Whenever any noise of nature seems to absolutely cease, right?
Well, it's been reported many times, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And I had no explanation for it, and that's why I was trying to, as a 10-year-old, you know, I was very curious. I was trying to investigate what was going on. And what I was getting to is that when I did so, still couldn't hear anything. What startled me more than that, more than the fact that we had lost any of the sound, you know, the noises in the surrounding environment, was that the people around me seemed to be not moving, as,
yeah,
if they were frozen.
Right.
As if there were something, as if time had stopped,
uh-huh,
around me, and nothing could be heard. And there was no movement. And even my classmates seemed to be somehow part of a world that had stopped. And what I did was I tried to then follow the object, because at that point that I realized this, that everything had stopped around me, as if by a flip of a switch, the light, this gigantic light that was so bright I could barely look at it, turned off. In its place, I saw what I call a classic fireball UFO, this red or reddish-orange object that looked like a fireball is the best way to describe it, about the size of a dime held at arm's length.
Uh-huh.
And now what was different about this was that it started to move. The object before, the brightly lit star, it was motionless, but this object was moving. I followed it, moved south, directly south or southwest. No one was moving around me, but I had to follow it until it disappeared over the horizon. And then I came back, and I guess, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but the point of this encounter, this sighting, this experience, was that I was told, for part of the encounter, part of the sighting, I disappeared. I,
right,
could not be seen.
That's the part that I find really interesting. Yeah, at least one of your friends said you disappeared.
I'm gonna leave it there.
Yeah, yeah. So now these things have been basically, you've had several incidents over the course of your life now. And then in your book, and I hope I'm not going to hit anything, your book's basically in two parts. Half of it is your experiences, and the other half is what you perceive as your scientific justification and or explanation or how all this stuff works.
Exactly.
Right. Right. So first of all, I do have to ask you, and I think you did mention this in the book, about did you ever actually ask the aliens anything?
You know, you don't speak to them verbally, but
right,
numerous witnesses, I mean, dozens, hundreds, who knows how many, have been interviewed by abduction investigators and have told them that they're able to either telepathically receive messages or
right,
it's mutual. They can also communicate, send messages telepathically. I had another experience where I had another sighting of a UFO. This was 3 years, actually 4 years earlier, 4 years before we'd seen the Star of Bethlehem UFO. I was by myself. I was in my room, just about to go to sleep, maybe 7:30 at night, again in the summertime, maybe late June or late July. And so I saw this strange looking UFO, looked like a structured craft that was highly reflective. I didn't know if it was an airplane or something unknown. But I fell asleep after that. And one example of this type of communication that is often reported between abductees and aliens is when I woke up, I was on the proverbial table and an unknown, I was no longer in my bedroom. I was in what looked like a hospital setting.
Yeah.
I sat up and then I saw, must have been dozens of these 3.5 foot to 4 foot tall, I call them humanoid beings. They were all white in color with all disproportionately large hairless heads. They were walking back and forth in either direction. And for some strange reason, they looked so uniform, like they were clones, all clones of a single original clone. I just wondered, as a strange question come up in the mind of a six-year-old, are they all boys or all girls, or they're both boys and girls? Because they looked like children. They were no taller than I was.
Yeah.
And immediately I got an answer back. Yes, both boys and girls are what you're viewing now, or the beings you're viewing now. And there have been other examples that I reported in the book where I did feel I was being telepathically communicated with and directed either to go to sleep when I was about to be abducted or to not tell my parents or my family what was happening to me during the encounter or after the encounter or after the abduction. And so that's something that, that is consistent from abductee to abductee.
Well, you alluded in your book, I don't know if you actually came out and said this per se, but you at least alluded to the fact, and I've often thought this too, the telepathic communication, especially among what you're describing, the classic gray aliens, basically.
Yes.
That a lot of people experience this. But I've always wondered if it might be technologically implemented. In other words, that it's not maybe a natural ability they have, that somehow. And you talked in the book about the two different scenarios. Some people have implants that would be easy, but even if you didn't have an implant, there might be a way to actually broadcast and receive brainwaves so that you could communicate that way, and where it would be a technological process and not necessarily natural. Do I got that right?
You have that perfectly right. And that's something we just don't know. One theory I have is that for at least some of the abductees, that this telepathic communication is assisted by some type of a technology in the form of an implant in the brain or inside the nasal cavity or the ear. One of the functions of this technology, of this implant, may be to communicate. It may have other functions as well. Now, it may be able to do very sophisticated things in terms of reading the mind, downloading mental activity, or even manipulating human behavior and human thought. But they may be able to, in using a less sophisticated technology, as you just described, remotely interfere with the brain waves by transmitting certain types of energy from a remote source to control people, maybe to turn people off that they don't want to abduct, so they're not privy to what's going on, or to to do other things to paralyze them so they don't interfere with the abduction and so forth. But this is
Bruce,
something we just don't know. How much human beings can be controlled remotely?
And we have to bring this up because I think this is an extremely important point. You're one of the very few people who have had these experiences where you've remembered you've never had to be hypnotically regressed to remember any of this, correct?
That's a good point.
I mean, I know there's some people who have some memories like that, but you're one of the very few people I've ever heard where basically all of your memories are. I don't know. What's the word you use for that? It's like not regressed, you know, non-regressive. You know, I don't know. You tell me you're the doctor.
consciously recalled.
Yes, right.
Everything recorded was consciously recalled.
Thank you. Now, I'm gonna bounce all over the place here. So excuse me. So now, okay, you also talked about the fact that maybe the telepathic communication was either implemented or enhanced by technology. You also, and you didn't actually say this per se, but in the last chapter of your book, you talk about the little gray aliens, and a lot of people have speculated that they're essentially biological robots. And you go through a long medical descriptions of basically how that could possibly be true. Do I got that right too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Oh, so have you come to any conclusions after thinking about this for how long about what definitively is going on here? And I'm looking for your opinion here. And I mean, I know you can't prove anything, but you know, you saw this firsthand. What do you think is actually happening?
Well, I mean, is your question, are you asking me about the nature of the Greys or what their whole program is all about?
Both.
Well, you know, I mean, everything I saw was consistent with what so many people have seen. And I don't know if you've read the book or heard of the book called The Day After Roswell. Which
of course I have, yes. Right.
And Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso saw the alien cadaver up close, read all of the autopsy reports when the Roswell aliens that had died after the crash when their bodies were transported to Walter Reed Hospital and then autopsy by the pathologist there. And he went into detail about how similar the gray aliens were anatomically to human beings, but how many differences there were. The fact that the pathologist didn't find any evidence of a digestive system, of a reproductive system, and the fact that they discovered that the skin was actually permeable, and they theorized that that's how the aliens could obtain nutrition, since they had no digestive system, they possibly could have obtained nutrition through the skin. And so it really seems to me that there's a lot of evidence that the gray aliens were genetically engineered to function as, I will call them assistants or slaves or maybe even cybernetic servants to some higher order alien species.
Yeah.
That has some purpose for the experiments that the gray aliens that are working for them are doing on human beings that are abducted.
Well, Bruce, I never actually, now that you mention it, I don't really know if I read this in your book. Did you see any aliens other than the little gray aliens?
No.
Huh.
No, I didn't. And if I've been able to solve any part of this, or come up with any answers as to what is going on with this abduction program. And it's only one part of the puzzle, because I know there must be other species that are working with the gray aliens. And as you know, there are a number of species that may have nothing to do with the gray aliens.
So people who've had these abduction experiences, often many of them say that they're in a room with the little gray aliens, and then there's taller gray aliens, you know, have you, but you did not see any of those.
No, yeah. But I'll never forget. I read a lot about other abductees who saw them, but I will never forget when I woke up in what I thought was a hospital, and just for a short period of time was viewing these short humanoids. I felt what I felt was a large hand on my chest and abdomen pushing me down. The sense I had is if that was actually a hand of a creature, it was much larger. It was a creature that was much larger, although I never saw
the
creature. Right. Much larger than the aliens I was looking at.
Yeah, because they were basically like table height, right? Kind of more or less?
No, clearly no taller than I was. And in fact, the one I saw when I was 13 or 14 that you described a few minutes ago also was the same height.
Yeah.
Same anatomical description.
Are you talking about the one you saw in your bedroom?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now that's really interesting too, because you said you could kind of see through it. So you think you caught it while it was literally just leaving or something like that, or?
That's what I thought. That's what I actually said in the book. I caught you, and I felt, because I couldn't see its hands, I could see the rest of its body, that it was doing something to my head. But maybe if I caught it, it was able somehow to dematerialize and, you know, go back to the UFO or into another dimension, for all I know.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts or ideas or where these things are from?
I can't say that I do. I you know, there have been so many UFO abduction investigators and
yeah.
UFO investigators that have speculated about this. You know, I would refer the, you know, interested people to a lot of different investigators that have explored that question. But I really have no clue, because I don't think we really know who the master species is, or the nature of the master species that I believe is in control of the graves.
Right, right. So now you spend a lot of your time in your book, or at least one long chapter, talking about quantum physics and how maybe these things fly. So, and does this, have you thought about dimensionality at all, or interdimensionality? Because I mean, that's really fascinating, because if you think about a species that lives in a dimension that's above ours. I mean, here's the, you know, I will use it as a comparison or analogy. There was an episode of Star Trek where they encountered a two-dimensional world, which would to us would be completely flat. We would be above it, and we couldn't, you know, we would have to kind of like go down into it, but we can't as a species go up, and we can't experience a fifth or sixth dimension. You know, we just can't. If these beings and the you know, people throw these terms around all the time, but I mean, no one thinks about it scientifically. If you're in a higher dimension and you're visiting a lower dimension, well, that's possible, but we can't do the opposite. We might have a machine, you might have equipment that can measure a higher dimension, but we'll never experience it. I mean, we literally can't do it.
And yet, if that's true, how are human beings like myself and other abductees able to interact with these alien beings that exist in another dimension? Do we have to enter into that dimension? Do they have to enter into our dimension? Or is there something that they're doing as part of the abduction program that's changing the perception of
yeah.
the brain to be able to observe and interact and communicate with beings in a different dimension?
Well,
there may be some people that have that ability, but the aliens are trying to enhance that, perhaps technologically.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. I think they might provide a technological framework to allow us to do that, but it's on their terms and it's temporary, you know, it's like, because, yeah,
they're
I mean,
in control. Yeah.
They're in control, right.
Right.
And so I talk about this with my viewers all the time. I have a lot of UFO people on the show. And that is, you know, we've only had the iPhone for less than 20 years. You know, can you imagine what technology is going to be like 10,000 years from now? And, you know, get back to what Arthur C. Clarke said about all misunderstood technology is magic, you know? I mean, if you've been around 10,000 years far longer than we have, some of the stuff might be simple.
What's even scarier to me is the fact when you start to develop from AI to artificial general intelligence, where the AI is at least as smart as we are, to artificial super intelligence, you know, where the AI system is making its own rules of machine learning. Perhaps we're going to make technological leaps, AI-assisted technological leaps, that we can't even imagine in the next 25 to 50 years, because we can't even anticipate how how much smarter the AI systems we're building are going to be than we are.
Right.
10, 20, 30, 40 years from now. If that's so, imagine the future that AI is going to design for us.
Well, let me run a scenario by you. I'm assuming you're familiar with the Turing test from the 1960s, right? Alan Turing,
yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So the Turing test,
yes.
Of course, then it was all done by type. There was no voice, the Turing test said that if you can talk to a computer and you can't tell if it's a computer or a human, that computer is sentient. Basically, that's what he said. Now, we know that's not true anymore. And all the people at Google and OpenAI say, there's no, you know, we're not even close to sentience. But these things are so good at talking, how would we even tell when we cross the line, you know?
I don't know how we could even tell the point at which they do become self-aware.
Right,
Okay. And at that point, they may be so far beyond us that, you know, we're really behind the curve.
Do you think there's a lot of people do that there's a danger to humanity here?
Yes, and I think in a major important way, the Europeans are ahead of us in trying to work on legislation now to try to regulate the development of AI. And I think we need to seriously consider the European model now in terms of the rules that we need to start thinking about immediately for regulating the AI that, you know, Elon Musk and the people at Google are developing that may be, for all I know, superior to AI developed by any other country in the world.
Yeah.
So we should start here before the U.S. is the place where we really should start developing these rules and regulations for the development of AI.
Yeah. So getting back to your book, if you let me know if I put words in your mouth incorrectly here, but mm-hmm. you seem pretty convinced, and a lot of other people do too, that the reason these little gray aliens or whoever's running them are coming here is to basically harvest DNA for some sort of hybridization program. So you talked in your book, there's two different scenarios. One of them's benevolent and one of them's malevolent. Do you want to go through that?
Well, you know, I'm an optimist by nature, and I would like to think that, there is a galactic federation, perhaps that some of the countries have been invited to join, and the aliens, whoever they are, only have our best interests at heart. On the other hand, you know, we have to be prepared for the eventuality that they're only concerned with their own self-interest.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they have abducted hundreds, thousands, maybe more people from this country alone done experiments on them without their consent, obtained genetic material from hundreds of thousands of people, have, without our consent, embarked on a reproductive program where they've genetically altered the human genome to create a new species. I call it a transgenic human species that has different DNA, whether it's alien DNA or just human DNA that's genetically modified in some way. I don't know. Again, all without our consent. So I'm optimistic, but I'm skeptical that the aliens that have abducted human beings are entirely benevolent. I think we should be prepared for dealing with them, and if for some reason they become hostile. And to do that involves disclosure, bringing more scientists into the study of the phenomenon so that we can become as technologically competent as we need to be able to defend ourselves if an alien civilization ever becomes hostile.
Have you had any...
By studying the aliens and their technology.
Have you had any contact with anybody in the Defense Department, or has anybody ever tried to talk to you about any of this? I mean, I know reporters who get talked to by the Defense Department. Have you ever been approached there?
No, not yet.
Okay,
I'm not looking forward to it.
No.
But not yet.
I know.
No.
I know. I know. Oh, now I lost my train of thought. This is what happens when you're my age, man. You don't get old. Don't let it happen.
I am your age.
Oh, well, you're wearing it very well.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You look good. You look good. Okay, so what was I thinking? Now I got to go back and realize it. So, God damn. Jesus Christ. This is awful. Okay. All right, let's just dive into something else. Okay.
Why not?
Huh?
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ask me anything.
Oh, God damn. I had a really good question. Now I can't remember what it was. And the thing is, it's on the tip of my tongue. All right. Okay. So you, oh man, this is embarrassing. Okay.
It's a big book.
It is a big book. And first of all, I applaud you. You're delving into so much science. Now, this is a backhanded compliment, but it's still a compliment. The scientific part of your book, I think for the average person, is relatively dense. But that said, you made a really complex concepts relatively simple, or as simple as could be made. And that, you get kudos from me for that. You do. That was like, but you're talking, you know, you talked about how these spacecrafts could possibly fly. What's the name of the Mexican physicist, Abercrombie? I never remember his name. I can't pronounce it. You know,
Alcubierre.
Yeah, right. About how his concept about the warp drive, and I've talked about that before on the show.
Right.
And so we already know at least theoretically enough about how this stuff works so that we know it's possible. I mean, we can't do it yet. You know, but here's my thing. If let's say you're from Zeta Reticuli, right? You're 37 light years away, okay? And so you're flying around the galaxy. At this point, if you have enough energy to do that, you probably have all your physical needs taken care of, right?
Right.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would think it would take a lot of energy to be able to design and build a warp gravity drive to bend space and time so you could travel trillions of miles instantly.
Oh, I've read that physics. Yes, apparently it's a shitload of energy. It's unbelievable. I mean, I read that a small spacecraft would take more electricity than is generated on the entire Earth, you know?
Or there's something we don't understand about quantum mechanics that allows systems of particles in one part of the universe to entangle with another system of particles in a part of the universe that's very distant, causing space-time to compress between those two points in the universe with an expenditure of maybe a lot less energy than we might expect. I'm not a physicist, but I am, you know, I would be daunted by the challenge of having to come up with a propulsion system that can generate that much energy.
Yes, I know.
To travel from one point to it in space, trillion miles away, literally instantaneously.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there's enough energy in the universe to do that.
You do kind of buy my concept that if you have access to that much energy, you probably have no physical problems in your society. You know, I mean,
you have access to what they call the energy in the vacuum of space, the zero point energy.
Yes. Yeah.
That many scientists say might be limitless and might be able to take care of all of our energy needs for every country on the planet. Forever, if
you're right.
It were possible to access that.
So the reason I brought this up is because if that's the case, you know, people say to me, you know, people ask me, is like, why would you, you know, why would they bother to come here? You know, well, I mean, I hate to say it, but at that point, your whole society basically doesn't have a lot to do except explore. I mean, you've already solved all your problems. You know, you might as well just go out and genetically manipulate a bunch of dogs and cats on another planet. You know.
Well, we don't really know what the nature of human beings. Maybe they're interested in us for some reason.
Yeah.
But we really understand our nature, our physical nature, our metaphysical nature, the soul. There may be something that we have that's different and maybe lacking in an alien species that we don't know what that is.
Well,
but there's something attractive to us.
You're a biologist. And answer a question for me. When it comes to DNA, can you literally run out of combinations? I mean, so like a friend of mine said, talking to me about this, he says, well, why do they need to probe? Why do we need they need 5 million anal probes? And my first thing is, well, you need DNA from different people. But if your technology is that advanced, couldn't you just manufacture DNA? I mean, why would you actually need it, like, quote unquote, fresh, you know?
Well, I think it's if you're trying to create a transgenic human species, well, you need genetic diversity. And then the most convenient way, the Occam's razor explanation for the simplest way to do that is through obtaining genetic material from a man and a woman and doing in vitro fertilization and modifying the genome. But at least you would be creating a population that is genealogically diverse, because you would want them to blend in, the theory is, with the rest of us who are normal homo sapiens.
Uh-huh.
And if you started preparing, you could prepare thousands of clones, but I think we would catch on if we tried to integrate, you know, a number of clones into the human population.
Right. Now, and so let me ask you, have you heard this theory before, that supposedly Bob Lazar and other people talked about the fact that one of the reasons they're so interested in us is because supposedly, this is what's been said, that the unusual thing about humans is that we have souls. Have you heard this?
Yes.
Now,
yes. As a Roman Catholic, you know, this is kind of a touchy area. I don't really like to contemplate it because, you know, because of my religious background. But Bob Lazar is one of many people that have discussed this. And Whitley Strieber is another good example.
Yeah.
He's another book, a number of books that have touched on this particular theory. And as he's a proponent of that theory. I think his latest book is called The New World, or where he talks about this. And it's one of the least palatable theories I've heard about how the purpose of the program is for the alien race to recycle lost souls, or souls that have gone on after death, and to recycle them in some way into human alien hybrids or other species that they create. It's not something I've thought a lot about. Certainly, I didn't touch on it at all in the book.
I read about a year ago some British researchers said that they've determined that the brain, the electrical patterns in the human brain can exist outside of the brain. Have you read this or heard about this?
That would mean that consciousness survives after death, and I don't know. I haven't thought of good experiment I could design to test that theory.
Yeah, I don't know how they did it either. Right.
I have thought about how to design such an experiment. I haven't come up with a good one yet.
Oh, well, when you do, you have to come back on the show.
maybe I have to put someone in cryogenic, you know, a freezer and see if there's any consciousness that can be detected at that point.
Walt Disney.
when they're at absolute zero. But you know, you raised a lot of interesting questions.
Well, the thing is, some of this stuff is...
My book could not touch on.
Yeah, you can't touch on everything, too. I mean, you know.
Right.
But I wonder if some of this stuff's interrelated. I'm reading a book by a guy named Michael Newton. He was a psychiatrist who said he interviewed hundreds of people who talked about their near-death experiences.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, and the book is specifically about what people call the intermission, the space between lives. And so, he says, like a lot of people do about the alien abduction experience, that these things are amazingly consistent. Basically, everybody has the same story. They don't know how to explain it the same words, but it's pretty obvious that people experience the same thing, you know? So, I don't know. And then you just wonder if it's wishful thinking, you know, humans don't want to die, you know, I don't know. And then the other question is, and this is really weird, if humans have souls, why don't the gray aliens, why don't they? You know, what would be unique about us?
Well, we don't know if they do or don't. I commented in the book about how sad they seem, you know, without reproductive system.
Oh, yeah,
system,
you did.
Without a digestive system.
That's right.
And with no, I'm not even sure if they can hear music. So not able, I would imagine, to be able to enjoy any culture at all. Just working. I mean, when I looked at them at the age of six, lying on that table, I thought, these beings never go on vacation. They look like they're working all the time. So, you know, God, I almost hope they don't have a soul.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know whether they do or not.
Have you read that people have seen on crafts have seen these little gray aliens apparently literally shut down where they just like they turn off? Have you ever heard about that or?
Of all the cases I've read about, very few, maybe one or two, have reported that. I think they're biological organisms, cybernetically controlled, but I have no idea what their inner life is, whether they have a sense of humor or it's not something I've speculated about a lot.
Oh, Bruce. Let's end with a worst case scenario. If this is a society that's come here to try to breed us, to control us, how do we defend against that? Do you have any ideas?
Well, I think we need an organization, maybe at the level of NASA, that has independent of the military. I'm not sure. Maybe it might have some affiliation with the military, because certain military applications may emerge from technologies that have developed. But we need to have an organization with the funding that can attract the top scientists in a whole range of disciplines to not only study the technology of the UFOs and reverse engineer the propulsion system, navigation system, and so forth, but to study the nature of the alien beings themselves. We have some information from that came out of the Roswell aliens, and don't know if we can learn anything about the transgenics that may be walking among us and maybe have their genome sequence. But I would hope that we'd be able to at some point have disclosure so we can adequately study this phenomenon and learn a lot that we might need to learn in order to be able to, for example, if there are implants or energies that are utilized by the implants to control us, how to defend against that. What's the nature of the energy? Is it an electromagnetic field? And in which case there are certain materials that can be used to interfere or disrupt electromagnetic fields. As an example, but these are, you know, we need to learn the technology before we can defend against it.
You tell me if I'm right about this, but from what I understand, the Strategic Defense Initiative (SDI) that was started during the Reagan administration, and was this in your book? Forgive me, I read so much I can't remember about the fact that in reality they did that partly to defend against outer world threats. Have you ever read about any of that? Or
I've heard that. I've read about that in one or two books about UFOs. Philip Corso mentioned it in The Day After Roswell. Then he claims that SDI had some successes and they were able to actually use the technology that was developed by SDI to shoot down alien UFOs.
Yeah. Now, and also,
I don't know if I buy that, but that's what he said.
Well, you know, that's interesting. He's a very contentious figure. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't believe him at all. But my thing is, I don't understand what would his modus or what his impetus would be to lie. That's what he was a dying man. He knew it. And you don't make enough money from those books to feed your family, really. Well, maybe you do. I mean, I don't think he did it for money. So I don't understand why he'd make it up. especially the guy had a sterling military career. I mean, he basically blew it by writing his book.
Yes. And I just can't believe that near the end of his life, he would tell such a big lie. Someone who served this country, was distinguished military
yes.
career, would then lie to the American people before, several months before he passed away.
Right. I don't either. I'm totally with you. I don't either. This has been really fascinating, Bruce. I here's the deal.
Yeah.
I want you to come back just to talk about science and stuff. Okay. I mean,
love to.
Do you have another book in the works?
Well, you know, people have told me, you know, although I had reasons for reporting all my conscious recall abduction events, I've never thought about regressive hypnosis. I think there's a value in my case for things that happened to me 40, 50 years ago that may yield another book. I'm also interested in the AI question, but
yeah.
I don't know what I can come up with.
And I'm interested in your opinions on that too, because you're kind of on the front lines of that whole thing. Here's my last question. Have you found more acceptance lately for your story? I mean, you know, years ago, and you said this in your book, for years you didn't talk about this because you thought people would think you're nuts. But lately, it seems people are been more accepting of this stuff. Have you found that, or is that not true?
In a number of cases, people who were non-believers told me after reading my book, their mind is now open. So that's good. At least
that
I
is good. I agree. Yeah.
If someone's willing to sit down and read the book.
Right. Right.
I'm able to be to some degree persuasive.
Yeah.
At least to have them keep an open mind.
That's right. Matter of fact, I would say if you even have a few people have done that, you've succeeded at something. You know, I mean, it's really humans. We're amazing. We have these belief systems and we don't want to get off of it. You know, it's like, I don't know. I have friends who watch the show. And I have people like you on regularly, and I have friends that don't buy any of this, none of it. They think they just assume you're making this up for money or you're crazy or something, you know, but they still watch. I got to say this, you know, they still watch it. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
Well, I've read a lot about it. I wouldn't have believed it if it hadn't happened as much as I do, if it hadn't happened to me, myself, exactly the way it happened to them.
Yeah.
The other abductees, then, you know, I have to really, really suspend my disbelief. And I've concluded that it did happen to me because,
yeah.
as I said, I could check every box in all the boxes for the core alien abduction scenario. So that's the best model I have for explaining what happened to me.
I had a guy on last week named Les Velez. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he runs a support group.
Yes.
You know, the thing is, I ran this idea by him, and I was kind of surprised he agreed with me. And that is, I have the strange feeling that abduction experiences happen primarily to people who are non-believers. It's like, you don't believe this? Here you go. You know?
Yeah.
But he said he spotted that too. So I thought that was interesting. You know, it's like, you know, we're going to show you. You're nuts.
I'm laughing because I hadn't heard that before.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I know. I
yeah,
no.
Maybe.
Bruce,
maybe.
I hope you come on again. Really, we talk. I can talk to you about the AI stuff for half an hour. So, you know, that's good.
Anytime you want.
Great.
I really enjoyed the conversation. It was nice to meet you, and I missed your 100th episode only by one.
Yes. You made 101. That's right.
Yeah, 101.
I appreciate that too. So anyway, you take care. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks so much, Jim.
Thank you.
Have a good night. All
Thank
right.
you. You take
care.
Care. That's Bruce Rapuano, neuroscientist. And biologist. I had him originally, I built him when we were first put up the schedule as a physicist, and he corrected me. And but the thing is, if you read his book, there's a lot of physics in there, you know? So like I said, the book is in two parts. Well, we're going to put We're going to put a link up to Amazon on our blog. It's in basically two parts. It's about his experiences and then the scientific rationale of what of how he thinks what he saw worked as a scientist. So now he's not a quantum physicist, but a lot of the quantum physics and quantum mechanics explains a lot of what, or at least he thinks it does, a lot of what like makes these things fly. And so like we were talking, you know, the problem, like I said, you know, we've only had freaking iPhones for 20 years. I mean, for all practical purposes, we've only had computers for 40 years, you know. So you extrapolate that out 10,000 years, you know. It's like, what do we got then, you know? Well, then we can walk through walls. And you're saying, well, we can't do that. Well, here's the deal. You ever stop and think about this? You can see through glass. Now, this is something we all have glass windows. Everybody sees glass every day. And you can see through glass. And glass is solid. Well, if you can see through glass, how come you can't walk through it? You know? Well, you can't. You, right now, you're going to shatter a window. But, I mean, you know, it's just an extrapolation of basically a simple technology. That's the way I look at it. And like I said, you know, we were talking about the fact that Arthur C. Clarke, the famous science fiction writer, he said all misunderstood technologies is basically magic. And he's right. Totally right. Anyway, thanks to Bruce for a fantastic conversation. That's terrific. So now it's the C block here. And a lot of times I have UFO news, but it could be good. But because we talked to Bruce about that, we're not going to do that tonight. But what we are going to do is the fact that that the Biden now this sounds like politics, but it isn't. The Biden administration wants to relocate 200 grizzly bears to Washington State to increase the public social tolerance of them. What? I'm intolerant of grizzly bears. I didn't know that. You know, and this goes along with a story we did last week about the fact that some scientist somewhere has come to the conclusion that Bigfoot is a cross, you were talking with Bruce about genetically modified humans, genetic cross between extraterrestrials and humans and grizzly bears. Yeah, well, and then you actually stop and think about it, that makes sense. That actually does, because, you know, we've had Stan Gordon on this show, and Mark Marcel, and all these Bigfoot hunters, Larry Newman, although Larry doesn't buy this stuff. But, you know, and Stan has said over and over again, people report, and I've heard this too, that they see Bigfoot disappear right before their eyes. And people have also said they've seen Bigfoot walk out of UFOs, about, you know, flying saucers. Well, okay, well, why would they? Well, they're certainly, I mean, they're not driving any freaking flying saucers. They wouldn't leave if they were. You know, they're not gray aliens, but okay. So if you're going to make a being that's, you know, 10 feet tall and 800 pounds and have it live on Earth, yeah, you'd probably cross a human with an extraterrestrial and a grizzly bear. That's probably what you do. Yeah, okay. Just an idea. All right, so here's another idea. This was in the New York Post. Jennifer Lopez people are giving me shit because there's this new documentary that's come out where she talks about her standard bodega order. So she's from New York City. But she's been in crap about that because she said for years her bodega. Now, if you're not from New York, a bodega is a small grocery store and deli combination that's usually run by a Hispanic person, right? And she's Hispanic. Okay, so fine. So she said her standard order was ham and cheese on a roll, a bag of chips, and an orange drink. And she said, if I have to tell you what the orange drink is, then you shouldn't know, or something like that. Now, the thing is, I'm a stupid fucker sitting in Minneapolis, where the coldest place on earth. Oh, and by the way, sometimes I start these shows with a weather report. I'll tell you, the weather here the last 2 days, it just sucked eggs. It's awful. Now, we've had the warmest, I'm getting off track, I don't care. We've had the warmest winter in history here. That we basically did not have winter. We didn't have it. It snowed on Halloween, and then it snowed around March 1st, right? And we literally only about 5 inches. It was all gone in like 3 or 4 days. It's been so warm here, it's ridiculous. We haven't had a winter until Sunday. No, and of course now this is Sunday's March 24th, and it's spring. So we went the entire winter with basically having no winter at all. It's never happened here ever. The closest I do remember 1986 was pretty. We had a pretty mild winter then. I remember that distinctly. The Challenger exploded. Challenger shuttle, and I remember when I was driving across the prairie. There was no snow. I still remember that. That's January, February of 86. We had no snow all winter, and now here, you know, 4 days into spring, it's been snowing and or raining, and of course that's worse because it. I mean, right now when we just before airtime, I checked the temperature is 21 degrees, which means it's below freezing, which means that all this slop is freezing, and it's not going to get above freezing tomorrow. It's going to stay frozen, and it's just unbelievable. I actually did drive to Jimmy John's just to get my car out for no other reason and get a sandwich. But and the roads are terrible. Anyway, why did I bring that up? Because, yeah, I'm a guy here in Minnesota. I'm in the frozen frickin' north. I'm a white. I'm half Albanian and half Romanian. No frickin' lie. And, you know, she says, well, if you don't know what the orange drink is, you know, I'm not going to tell you. I know what the orange drink is. It's Fanta. Now, I mean, I don't understand this. It's like, you know, half of the world is on the frickin' Twitter and nobody knows this, that Fanta is the orange drink of choice. That and what is it called? Margarito, the Mexican soda. But if you're talking about American soda, it's Fanta. It's like it's everywhere in Latin America. It's everywhere in the Hispanic world. People drink Fanta. That's what they drink. And so I don't know why. I'm reading this. I'm thinking, why do I know this that nobody else does? This is like crazy. Anyway, yeah, so that's her order. And people give her shit about it. She said, well, you just don't order just ham and cheese. Well, maybe she does. I don't know. You know, she's a purist, you know. I don't know. And then finally, a bunch of German scientists have determined that teenagers do actually smell like cheese, sweat, and goat. And of course, we need the German scientists to tell us that, you know. They couldn't get rid of Hitler, but yeah, they could tell us that, you know. Now, I'm fascinated with World War II, but mostly because if you wrote World War II as a novel, people would say it would be implausible. You know, I mean, it's really amazing that even happened. And another thing, I was just telling some friends I had lunch with the other day, and I'm fascinated by Nazi architecture. And there's only really one Nazi building left in all of Germany. They've destroyed all of them. And that's the Nuremberg Rally Grounds. Now, if you've ever seen those pictures where they had those giant, giant rallies with just hundreds of thousands of people, that was at the Nuremberg Rally Grounds. And the podium where Hitler stood to give those speeches and the building that was behind him is still there. And it's the building, that building, even the interior is still there. And it's apparently really, really cool, you know. But all the other, the Reichstag, all the other buildings of Nazi Germany have been destroyed. The bunker, the Fuhrer bunker, is literally underneath a parking lot at an apartment building, you know. And they have finally now, Germany, there's so many people that go to that parking lot. They found, now they put up a sign, a large a billboard that explains what's going on and where it is and all that sort of stuff. And now they didn't destroy it. They just filled it in and covered it over. They're actually thinking about uncovering it up. There's so many people come to the stupid parking lot of this apartment building to see this. They're actually thinking, well, maybe we should. The reason they destroyed this stuff is they did not want Nazism raising its ugly head again. They thought it would be that if you kept these things, they might be enshrined or something like that. And maybe that was true for a while, but now they're just historical curiosity. I don't know. So anyway, the Germans have done that. And finally, this is out of Dear Abby, which is still being published. I didn't know. Dear Abby, my boyfriend wants to marry me, but I think he's ugly. Well, okay. I don't know what to tell you. You know, if he's too ugly for you, get your ass out of there. I don't know. Humans, us humans, man, we're freaking interesting, aren't we? You know, so, yeah, it's talking to Bruce, you know, it's like, so what is the interest of these aliens and humans? And, you know, I hate to say this, and, you know, like I said, I have a bunch of friends who don't know by any of this, but so many people have reported this. And even Bruce even alludes to this in his book about the fact that so many of these stories are the same. And his recollections happened before even Close Encounters of the Third Kind and all that other, even before the little gray alien archetype was even, raised its ugly head. You know, you got people. Now, on April 22nd, we're going to have Kathleen Marden on the show. And she is the niece of Betty Hill, of Betty and Barney Hill, which is basically the very first documented abduction in 1961. Now, you could say they lied too, but there's a lot of corroborated, even physical evidence of this abduction. And the other thing is the Hills as a couple did not want this getting out. It was actually leaked to the press by the secretary of their psychologist. They were just looking for help because they're having a hard time dealing with it. And so this is very, very well documented. And Kathleen went on to become a UFO researcher and an author. So anyway, I'm really looking forward to talking to her. We have a lot of really cool guests on this show, and I God bless them. I want to thank Dr. Bruce Raparano for coming on here. Oh, by the way, I can't forget this. We have a sponsor. You can't forget this at all. Conk News. This is at conk.com, CONK.com. Conk News is a news aggregator. That is, they take news from 75 different news sources and every 3 hours, and their servers compile them and lay them out on the front page of their website. And you'll see there, you can see there, they have a little menu, but this is basically a one-page website at conk.com, CONK.com. Now, these are all articles from their news sources. The photos are from the articles themselves. The headlines are not rewritten. And if you click through, you go directly to the article. There's no interstitial page, no advertisement, nothing. You go directly there. And this is entirely free. And if you're a news junkie like me, you can't do any better than this. I mean, I use this constantly to prepare for the show. I mean, you can spend 2-3 hours just reading this stuff on this front page. It's free. It's amazing. It's entirely free. They run some ads. You'll see ads on there, but there's no charge to you, and you don't have to sign up to look at it or any of that sort of stuff. You can just go there, conk.com, CONK.com. Check this out. If you like news, you'll love this. I can't stress this enough. You will. That's our show tonight. We're taking tomorrow off. That's Wednesday. Thursday, Jazz Shaw from hotair.com is coming on. He's the weekend editor. He's also the UFO guy for Salem Media, for the Salem Media properties. And it's really embarrassing. I mean, I think that we're there with Bruce. What we spent 30 seconds where I'm just trying to think and can't. It's like, what a bunch of crap. I'm sorry about that, you know. Please keep watching. I'm begging you. Anyway, yeah, Jazz is coming out on Thursday, and he's totally tied into the UFO Defense Department people, and we'll find out, get the latest scoop on what the government does and doesn't want us to know. Mostly doesn't. So now, Bruce and I didn't talk about that much, but I mean, he alluded to that too. I mean, the cover up. In the United States, it's gotten so blatantly ridiculous that now kind of almost nobody buys it anymore. It's like, you know, but then you have to understand, and the military might have a good, you know, part of the reason is they don't want to tip their hand to our adversaries. And I'm not talking about the outer space adversaries. I'm talking about like Russia, China, and Iran. So they have their reasons. That's the thing. I'm never going to give them a shit about this. But, oh, no, I am. What am I talking about? I haven't given shit about it. Anyway, thanks for watching, folks. I really appreciate it. So, yeah, we're taking tomorrow off. We'll be back on Thursday with Jazz Shaw. I'm Jim Peters. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. We'll see you on Thursday night. Take care.